This is Saha Says. Let's get to it.
What are we actually trying to do with this podcast so we can kind of build towards that goal? Because I want to help in whatever way I'm able to deliver this message. And if it's about, oh, well, San Antonio doesn't have a voice, or what is it? What made you want to do a podcast?
Well,
what's the goal with this thing?
We've been doing an all right job with Saha. We do have regular attendance. We do have regular attendees, and we have some rotation there. But there's a lot of these cybersecurity meetups and various other things. So I think Rackspace and a couple of places are starting like a cybersecurity and pitch their ideas or work on their ideas outside of kind of geekdom spaces. So, but you have to, you'll notice it's very careful not to say they're committing any money to it. They're committing space and they're committing resources to the incubator. They're not actually going to be funding any of these companies because I suspect there's a gigantic cybersecurity bubble. So what we're trying to do is I want to get in and lay the groundwork before the other end gets in, you know, before you start getting the CSI Cyber and the Scorpion guys in San Antonio. These are things that have to be nipped in the bud.
So how does this podcast help nip this in the bud? I'm serious. Because there has to be an understanding of who are we reaching out to? Which conversation are we trying to create or add to?
I want anybody to be able to, even if they're just working a help desk somewhere, to be able to pick it up, play it in their car, and maybe learn a thing or two as they're going down the road. And in order to do that, they have to be entertained. We all have blogs. We all have Twitter accounts where we post either witticisms or informational stuff. But for a lot of it, people need to hear you talking. It's just, it's more personal that way.
Yeah, but why do they need to hear it from us as opposed to Security Now or InfoSec Podcast Daily or Paul Thurrott or any dozen other avenues where people pick up security tidbits? What makes ours... What makes you want to do this, and what are you hoping to do? What kind of audience are you trying to reach? See, again, these are the things I'm trying to narrow us down on. If I'm sure we've all thought of them, just what do we want?
Well, I mean, why do I get my news from CBS when ABC exists? Why do I listen to the radio when I have the internet?
Enough of a level. So it's not just random chance, right? So they'd have to know you exist. The big three owned the airwaves. That was their claim to fame. They own the broadcast networks. So now we're in a long tail type situation when it comes to communication.
Okay, well, don't then change out the big guys with little guys. You know, why not go to, I don't know. It's there's all kinds of different market segments out there. And just because you don't want to, just because there's one that's like you doesn't mean that you shouldn't participate. I mean, just because there's another InfoSec podcast that goes around the corner doesn't mean that they're talking about all the same things we do. We try to, we try to push some of these issues to some of the issues, especially with regard to the how it affects your daily life, to the front. And there's a lot of folks that I think get more into the technical weeds and then they'll stay there. See, sure. We'll bounce back and forth. We bounce back and forth. We'll tell you that somebody's coming after full disk encryption and then we'll explain to you what it is.
Okay.
And we won't take 20 minutes trying to do that. So your boyfriend or whoever is not zoning out in the passenger seat of the car. They sit there and they listen. Okay, what are these guys? They're at least trying to be entertaining about it. You know, this is not the world's most exciting subject.
But it is. to some people, of course. It's cloak and dagger. It's, if you think of it in terms of cloak and dagger and you're just trying to spy versus spy your way through a situation, it can be kind of interesting. But of course, it is a niche market. Again, it's a small pool. That's why, that, going back to your earlier statement, it's a narrow field. I agree.
Right now, my kids are watching some British girl play Minecraft. They're not. We have Minecraft on every single in this house.
Wow.
Including all of their iPads, all the PlayStation, the Wii. We have it on all of them. But they're still watching this girl play Minecraft. And that's all she does. She like crafts and makes cookies and things like that.
Minecraft?
That's in Minecraft. I guess you can do that. But
apparently it's.
That's Minecraft. For me to watch somebody playing Minecraft is insanely boring. I mean, I can watch somebody play Final Fantasy or Chrono Trigger. That's fine. I watch Awesome Games Dumb Quick every year since some folks introduced me to it, because I think that the speedrunning stuff is kind of nifty to watch how they do it. But for that game, I don't see any point in not playing it. It seems weird, but they like it. They sit there, they watch it. They have been watching it. I have to go out there and fish them out from in front of the TV every half hour or so, or else they'll just turn it back on.
So you're telling me they're watching right now?
Well, I don't know. The door's locked, because otherwise they'll run in here.
No. Oh, gosh. Well, okay, then.
They're probably eating up my bandwidth.
I was going to ask. So, no, thank you for providing your point of view. Thank you.
All right, my thoughts. I was wanting to get involved because I found it interesting, the possibilities of it, especially, as in relating to one of the video podcasts that I absolutely loved until it died horribly, because they moved on to bigger, better things. I don't know if you used to be a fan of Dig Nation.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Where they had their own little website that, news stories of the week or month or whatever were, they would go off the top digs or likes
pre-Reddit. It was media. It was kind of a pre-Reddit thing with Alex and Kevin Rose.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, I listened to more than a few of those.
Yeah, I loved it, especially in the fact that they were able to, keep everything very relevant to their own audience, and even discuss some stuff that was happening that, just was downright, basically batshit crazy at different points. But, nice thing is it wasn't, stupid cat videos or anything else, but it was definitely relevant and, led me to dig further into, CNN, Fox News, all that, to learn further about what was going on at the time. And that's what I would hope to be able to provide, just a snippet, but from a security perspective.
Right.
And that's why my own thing is, with all this talk, go Fed, go Apple junk, it's like, well, isn't it just a part of a bigger problem or bigger opportunity? To take it from even an EFF point of view and say this is about rights. It's not just about access. This is about rights and right to privacy, what have you.
Okay, so Ivory Wolf, same question, man.
Well, for me, I was just thinking that Vesh and I, we talked about this before, and it really came about trying to get the word out there, any type of word regarding, security. Maybe use it to potentially get others that never really thought about joining, the security realm into joining it. Trying to get the information out there to people about what to do, what not to do, case studies, whatever. So I thought of it as entertainment. I thought of it as informant. And then also trying to potentially recruit into our area. You know, because I'm about tired of people, you know, these millennials that are more about the pop culture than, mm-hmm. you know, the sciences, engineering, and so on.
Okay. And I'm asking this also from the point of view of we have a team here. We're growing something, and it's the local San Antonio community, whether it's security or, well, because I hesitate to say hacking because not everybody's into hacking in particular. But seriously, it's what are we wanting to bring out of this? And I would like to help tailor our goals to meet that, rather tailor our efforts to meet that goal. So if it's growing the community for Saha and people who have a more general knowledge of security, okay, let's build towards that. So how, and that brings about the next question. How are we adding to the existing conversation? What are we offering that isn't already somewhere else out there?
Well, actually, I don't know that something else doesn't exist out there. I know that there are other security, you know, podcasts, of course, but something that's a little bit more local. I haven't heard anything, but not saying that it doesn't exist.
It's fine enough. Simply wanting to make sure that, again, if we're making all this effort to build something to share with everyone as we go forward, I would like to make sure that what we're delivering is digestible. And mm-hmm. Are we talking to hear ourselves talk? I hope not. That's not what I'd rather us not be here just because we can. We want to do this because I'm hoping we're here to do this, to offer something to the people who are not necessarily reading up on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in a way, definitely forces us to stay up on this stuff, right? Because we suddenly feel accountable, maybe. You think?
Yeah, because if we don't know what's going on, how do we have anything relevant to talk about?
Ain't that the truth?
Very true.
I knew it. So then, back at you, sir, why are you here?
That's a fair turnaround. So I'm here to try and help Saha deliver the message it wants to. I'm here to help grow our community because I feel that we are in a position to, if we make an effort, to share and grow in whatever way is available to us. If we want to be on the map from a media perspective, we should pursue that. If Saha itself seeks to grow from a media perspective so that we can say there is a presence in San Antonio and we're active and we're trying to grow and we're looking for your contribution, then we are trying to put ourselves in a position to make that possible. I'm here to help do something, not because I'm here because I want to be. I very much appreciate the opportunities you guys are trying to provide. If everyone doesn't see it up front, that's fine. There are different communities in this town. It would be nice if we kind of teamed up a little bit, but okay. So let's come from this. Let's start here. Let's see where it grows. I think we're all a little bit troublemaker and hopefully a lot more willing to learn.
Agreed.
It's all in good fun until someone loses a pie.
Well, I've got lots of replacement pies here, so.
Do you? Do you really?
Oh, yeah. I've got like 6 of them, so.
Raspberry pies?
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Other kind of pies?
No, that's a pie one. Well, original pie.
Yeah, original pie. I have 6 original ones.
Jeez. How did you come by them? Man, that's cool.
Dude, I just bought them a long time ago, and one of them's still in its original wrapping, so wow. I haven't started to work on my project for that one yet.
Do you have a project in mind?
Yes, actually, one of my Raspberry Pis I'm going to make into an Archer doorbell.
when they push the doorbell, what sound will play?
It's going to randomize between different, some of my favorite quotes from Archer.
I love it, because it's basically the Raspberry Pi. If you want to feel like you're 5 again and do the things you really couldn't do, the Raspberry Pi makes them possible.
That is true. That is true. Now, one of the things it will definitely do is it will play Mulatto Butts.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yes.
Is that a sound clip by any chance?
It is.
What? Okay, I'll admit my ignorance. What is that? The song from the show?
It is. It actually ends up being a ringtone in Archer's season 2, I believe. And it is hilarious. Just hilarious. Mm. I'll see if I can find it for you and then send it, because it is priceless.
That would be cool. So, a coworker of mine, a friend of mine, gave me a bag of old X10. I mean, X10 powerline and RF setups. And so they were frustrated. Well, not frustrated. They're moving. And so they were saying, look, I'm not going to have room for it in the new place. I think you would be a great candidate. I said, whoa, whoa, I'm not taking strays right now. But let me ask around. And, of course, I found someone who said, wait, a whole bag of X10? Why, I'd love to try that out. And so, of course, there are 4 or 5 different Raspberry Pi items in GitHub that you can actually look up, compile, and run. And so that's what we did, is we actually compiled MOCHAD, I'm hoping that's pronounced correctly, M-O-C-H-A-D, and which you tie with, it's called SweetPi. There's an automation component that you attach with MOCHAD, and that will actually allow you to use a, I believe it's a Ruby on Rails mobile app that will let you trigger events. And so you try it out by hooking up one of the USB controllers, and I mean old school USB 1.0, and on the Pi, it's fantastic. So it took, 5 minutes to compile. And then once it's up and running, you are golden. And so we were once we tried to figure out the real basic compile, because it's nothing. It's running that build essential, which the Pi comes pre-loaded with in Raspbian. And then on top of that, you add the actual, hey, now that this is running, let's go and hit an address in X10. And it worked great. Now, I know X10 isn't new, and I know this is simple, simple stuff, but the ability to, in under 10 minutes, really, plug in a couple of things, compile a couple of small set of code chunks, and suddenly you're able to turn on and off lights anywhere in your house. That's kind of fun. Oh, there we go. Thank you. Thank you, Ivory Wolf.
Oh, you are quite welcome.
Nice. That's pretty funny. I like that. I'm not going to hit play now. I'm going to let that alone, because otherwise I'll mess that up. And suddenly that'll be dumped into the room audio. I don't want to do that.
Oh, understood.
Because I've switched devices. If you've noticed, the entire recording isn't choking. I don't know if anyone else saw that last week, where the audio would stutter and pop, and that was, I think, my fault. Because I cannot blame Vesh for that one. I think that was the device I was using. So we have upgraded the device, and now we have smooth as silk audio with a much better DSP at the helm here.
Awesome.
So that was my extra bit on X10, because it's up, it's running, and my friend now is thinking about ways of wiring inordinate amounts of things in his home. He was actually talking about using this as an excuse to tie X10 to a kegerator he's running, because the built-in thermostat is kind of unpredictable, difficult to control. So he wants to take a basic thermistor, a single wire thermistor, through an interface. I guess it's a GPIO interface to the Pi, and then write a script that basically helps it monitor and replace the internal thermostat for the fridge. All this through the Pi, so that he can actually use X10 to trigger using if this then that. I mean, I'm like, wait. That sounds very Rube Goldberg. But if it works.
Exactly.
If it works, I hope he puts this on GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
Because I totally would want to do that myself.
Apparently, these single wire thermistors are inexpensive. They're on Amazon. It's hilarious when you realize how far we've come with basic physical controls, right? And it's just a couple of wires. As long as you can get power and ground, hey, it's all good. It blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone else in the group done stuff with the Pi and specifically with temperature control or moisture control?
No, not that. My two Pis that I've got now are both set up for basically war driving.
That was the box.
And I'm waiting for a third one to come in that I'm going to turn into a wearable. Because kind of I got a Pi Zero coming. I had to order that from Great Britain, of all places.
Well, that's where they make them.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, but they're just sold out crazy all over the States.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm waiting for that. Then I get to have a little bit of fun trying to make my own roll-your-own smartwatch out of it.
Oh, wait, that would be cool. Hang on. Ooh, Vesh just posted that he thinks he got it. Apparently I missed something, so it should be in the folder now. Let me go check if I can find a link to that mouse.
Sounds like I need to open up Google Drive.
It does.
Back to 2016, Selha says. I see 320, hey, 320 rundown.
Yep, that's where he was.
Yep, that's where he was. Because it wasn't in there earlier. Look at this. Oh my gosh. It says
stuff. Did you transpose everything from the podcast channel too?
It looks like he actually has. It looks nice. Like a good. Check it out. Is it open on your system yet?
I'm waiting for it to catch up.
Okay.
All right. 320. There we go.
Okay. So Vesh, for some reason, is not able to be in the room with us, but he's at least helping us push things forward. So at this point, then, I'm going to suggest, since it's 20 minutes in, I would like to say that we stop recording officially by 6 o'clock, and I may just throw in the segment where we've just been chatting as some of that, because that seems fairly decent. What do you guys think?
I would say that's all right, as long as I don't sound like a doofus.
Why would you sound like a doofus?
Hey, you'll sound like me, then.
Oh, come on, God. How's come that on.
Everybody wants to be like me.
Everybody run.
That don't would be true. Like Mike?
The homecoming queen's got a gun. No, wait. So, has anyone submitted any slogans for BSLV?
Lots.
Yeah, I saw a couple of yours, Coop.
Yeah, I was just being snarky the whole time.
Well, I did see Jagor's, and I really liked it.
What was it?
Really did. His was something along the lines of, what was it, make hacking great again or something like that?
It was make blank great again, fill in the blank, and his submission, he actually explains it. His was make cyber great again, or was it make hacking
great again? Oh, yeah, make cyber great again, which I thought was fantastic. Because back in the day, when you think about it, cyberpunks, I mean, it was awesome. And now it's a buzzword that makes me want to punch people.
Yeah.
Isn't hacking the same way?
It is.
Whenever you hear everything hack, it just wants you to, you know, punch somebody.
Hack, hack. Exactly. Hack. More like Mars Attacks is what I hear sometimes out of people.
That is great. That is great. That's actually
I'm hoping
a great
we're
movie.
Talking about the aliens screaming.
Yep.
Yep, we're five. That's awesome.
Actually, I would hope that's the sound they would make after I punch them in the face.
Wow.
Oh, that would be so great.
Oh my gosh.
That would make me so happy.
And the sound bite for the episode has been found.
And not to mention, that would make you want to keep punching them because now you're having fun.
won't you be having fun while you're punching them anyway?
Oh, boy. Well,
we're all turning into psychopaths. Let's change the subject.
Thank you.
Much testosterone for this episode.
Oh, come on now. I was going along the lines that we were going to be professionals. And, you know, it's just over the top. It's all over the top.
Yeah, well.
Because I came into this in 2011. I went to a very large, expensive conference, walked in saying, finally, we'll be taken seriously. This is going to be it. And within 5 minutes, 15 minutes, I was out in the hallway pacing up and down, having the equivalent of a panic attack. I was so upset. Because it's the year that I believe it was that RSA got hacked, so everything they were doing was, we're so sorry. And, I mean, it was very showy, they had a full-blown choir on stage. I mean, in robes and the whole thing. And I just couldn't, my brain could not comprehend what I was seeing. Because it's serious. We're going to take this seriously. This is going to be a bit. No, it's not. No, we're going to make this so tongue in cheek. And you overcommit. And the next thing you know, you're freaking out. At least I was. And so I came to the conclusion that keynotes may not be for me when it comes to large scale cons if I ever get to attend them again.
That's actually a really good topic to discuss. You know, keynotes, are they all that is cracked up to be? I mean, are we impressed? Do keynotes really change the dynamic of a con?
I actually believe that a keynote can set the tone for a conference, depending on whom is giving the presentation, and if there was a particular angle that the entire event was supposed to be based on, you know, some kind of specific event. I believe a keynote can actually enhance that experience. It can. The challenge becomes if we're keynoting for the sake, you know, right? So we're calling out a next level speaker, theoretically, to take on the role of trying to set a tone. And I guess we have to think about what it offers, what it brings to the table. Have you ever seen a keynote that didn't fit the event?
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yes, could you be more specific?
I would prefer not to be, because then it doesn't call anyone out.
No, that's fair. Yeah. No, that's really fair. So
instead, you can just, I don't know. I was going to say, can you give details without giving the name and true topic? Right.
But okay, so let's try it this way. What about the event was different than the tone the keynote was attempting to set? Was there any, so in other words, if it was a very large scale, or was it maybe more than 500 people, or was it around 150 people? How big was this thing?
It was much smaller.
Okay. Some of the more intimate ones, it's difficult to get keynote. Somehow I just don't know that keynote fits as a term. Like, what does that actually mean in terms of a conference? What does a keynote mean to you guys?
I would say that's more just, you know, somebody that's a little bit more high profile than the average speaker there that would hope to, you know, start it off like a conductor for a symphony, be able to give it a good jump start instead of sending the wheelchair down the flight of stairs.
Wow.
Agreed. Because there have been keynotes that I'm like, well, I've heard of this person a little bit, but should they be keynoting this particular conference? Probably not. So I think it should be, keynote should always be someone that is well known through the community. Or not necessarily well known, but someone that, you know, when you look at the bio, it's like, wow, they've accomplished quite a bit that I didn't realize they, you know, were actually working with, you know, like Jay Cran on something over here, or working with Chris Kaspersky over here, or did this or did that. You know, when you see that they've done other things, but they were just maybe not presented in front during all these things, then I'm cool with that. But if you're consider yourself a keynote, and then all of a sudden you just show up and you're like, wait a minute, I don't necessarily think you have accomplished enough to be considered a keynote.
Right.
Unless they can really stand and deliver. Because, you know, there every once in a while you might get lucky and yell Yahtzee after walking out of one where you're like, who was that guy? But then you're left saying, who was he? Because, oh my gosh, he really said something relevant and thoughtful. Now I'm just wanting to talk to him afterwards instead of, oh God, why?
Very true.
Why did I spend time in there? Somebody owes me 30, 40 minutes of my life. That's minutes I could have been in the bathroom or drinking or beating myself to death slowly against the wall. But instead I had to listen to him? Please.
My concern right there was that you said I could have been in the bathroom drinking. I'm like, whoa. You don't want to necessarily drink in the bathroom. Just
That was separate thoughts.
Okay.
In the bathroom, comma, drinking.
There we go.
Comma, beating myself to death against the wall, comma, somebody owes time and wasted in my life.
To reiterate, commas are important, and thank you.
Otherwise, you could just be a criminal easily that way.
Nice.
That is true.
So okay. So, keynotes, that's been our topic for the last few minutes. Why are they going to, what do they bring to the table as far as a conference is concerned? Because there's so many opportunities to meet new people and share ideas. That's sometimes where I think people grow out of the idea, from an evolutionary standpoint of attending conferences and learning. If you've never been to a conference, maybe starting out at a keynote is a good way to get rolling. But then as you kind of go to a few more conferences, you start to see, okay, well, maybe that doesn't meet my needs. So maybe I'll start out in LobbyCon, hanging out by the couches or by the front desk, waiting to see other folks I haven't caught up with in a while, or maybe I'm going to run into the presenter whom I was hoping to catch their talk later today or tomorrow, and you just catch them passing in the hallway. Because sometimes you can't even get in. For example, B-Sides Austin, now that I'm not going to mess up the date again, later this month. So some of us didn't remember to go and get tickets ahead of time. So you're going to get on the wait list, or you're going to be in LobbyCon because you can't get a ticket to get in. And that's fine. It's just that, okay, well, sometimes it doesn't always play out the way you hoped. So I don't think I'll be seeing any keynotes in Austin anytime soon. The point being that you can still get out a lot out of going to an event, even if you can't get in directly. Have you guys also done LobbyCon, or what? What's going on?
Do you guys even want to get into a keynote? I mean, the one at RSA, you just got to see, you know, little bow-ops. So who gives a crap about keynotes most of the time?
Yeah, typically that's how I feel too. Now there are some times that a keynote, it's because I want to see it because I know it may be a train wreck. So whenever, like for instance, Black Hat, you know, we actually had when we had
General Sassafras or whatever.
Yes,
it was.
Yes. So when, and I wanted to see how the community was going to behave around that particular
keynote. They pushed out.
They totally did, but it was awesome.
That was such bent to the will of what was going on. That was the saddest. But wait a minute, weren't we sitting right next to each other?
I think we were.
Yeah,
I think
we were. We were sitting together.
Yeah, it was pretty pathetic. But I was like, you know what? He wins because they did wuss out.
Yeah, if that were DEF CON, there'd be baseball. Ball bats.
I'm
sorry. DEFCON in Little Italy.
Well, explain. I mean, explain like, so, some more. So what
I
was
wasn't
it?
There.
What exactly was softballed in this thing? Was it just they pulled too many punches about what was being presented?
Oh no! It was the they had enough opportunity to deliver some very withering commentary.
Oh.
And instead, it was just a couple of talking point reiterations. I forget the specific comments. I sat there. You have the floor standing in front of you that you've spat so much bile and hatred at, and now you're not going to do anything?
Yeah, like, man.
You know, they do worse at Trump rallies, and he's slightly less hated.
Yeah. Slightly. That is true.
Well, saying inflammatory things is nothing new. I mean, that's how one gets ratings, is you go ahead and say the stuff that people either want to hear or don't want to hear, and that will cause people to become more passionate about your topics, which is why I think if we brought up this Carl's Jr. Automated restaurant, I think, you know, you could inflame some people, or at least avoid getting flame broiled. I'm not sure. Because when I saw first that there was an article talking about how they wanted an automated restaurant where you never see a human being, I begin to wonder if this is kind of like the no-tell motels you read about. You never see a human face. I don't understand. I mean, sure, at a drive-through at a financial institution or something where you're like, oh, yeah, sure, let me throw a check into this tube, and you get 2 seconds of FaceTime with someone who says, I'll process this right away. That's one thing. It's another to not see a human being and suddenly food shows up. It's a questionable topic.
Well, that draws down the amount of spit that happens to be in my burger.
Oh, my gosh. I was getting ready to say that.
Oh, come on.
Because, hey, being, I grew up in California, during my teenage years, and Carl's Jr.'s, that was our spot. We loved Carl's Jr.'s.
Mm-hmm.
But when Carl's Jr. finally got here to San Antonio, super stoked. And as most of the time, it's awesome. But there's, and I'm talking about the people working there.
I got you.
Now, there are certain time frames where it's right around the time that it's, you know, coming from the bar and stuff like that, and it's open. And those are the people that are usually working there that I don't want to get a burger from.
Oh.
No, not at all.
So you're
come
saying
on. Extra you don't
you don't want to get a burger from what's her name, Hilton there? Remember she was doing the Carl's Jr. ads?
Oh,
how quick do you think she spit out that bite of that burger?
I don't think she ever actually really no, I don't think that was ever actually consumed. I don't believe that I think that was special effects. I'm pretty sure that two or three effect companies had to be called in for that to take place.
Are you saying that Paris Hilton got a piece of meat photoshopped into her mouth?
Oh, no, but you just did.
Went there.
I'm pretty sure.
It wouldn't be the first time. He said it, not me. He said it.
If you're making labor more expensive and automation less expensive, this is not rocket science. That's one of the quotes from the article. But the idea that, okay, so you prep food, shove it in the tube, and I'm concerned how it's going to be delivered. I mean, unless this is like a space film where, you know, you can have freeze-dried food, or an MRE where you pop the little packet and it heats your food for you. I'm just not sure. What is it just going to, like, shoot at you as you drive by and you, like, just open your window like a reverse of throwing the change in the toll booth? I mean, how does this
work? I'm pretty sure it's not going to be that bad. It's not going to be that bad. I'm sure they're going to have kind of like a nice shoot for you, or maybe even like, you know, when you go to a bank and you just, you know, put your card in that tube, maybe you'll get your food like that. I'm good with that, because
you're saying you don't want your ATM to make it rain.
I am definitely saying that. I do not need coins.
It's raining food.
Yeah, exactly. I'm good with that.
Oh, wait a minute. Chipotle.
Shoot. Okay.
Chipotle and Taco Bell are suited to rolling stuff. 100, 200 yards. I'd stand in line for that. Catch a burrito from Chipotle. I'd put a 5 in.
At 200 yards?
That would be cool.
From above.
It's kind of like this, like the T-shirt cannon. It's a Chipotle cannon.
You heard it here first, folks. So we have the technology.
If you're in the nosebleed section and you get a burrito shot at you from the floor, I am severely concerned about. And it's worse than the kiss cam. Just a random cut to someone not paying attention. Burrito. And that's it. And that, you know.
Can you imagine the splatter on that?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So much
talk
guacamole.
Talk about splash zone of guacamole. And
okay, before we
lime,
get before people
rice
get ill.
Everywhere.
Before people get ill, I'm moving
you do
on.
Not...
What?
No, hold on. I have one more thing on the food cannon. This comes from Philadelphia, land of the excitable fan. And for anybody who's ever been to an Eagles game. But the Philly Fanatic actual hot dog shooting machine gun.
Wait, what?
Yeah,
hot
so
dog shooting machine gun?
It's here, people. We have it. A hot dog shooting machine gun.
That is awesome.
What? Who was someone asking for this?
Well, I was hoping that you could make a possible segue out of that into I have no idea what.
Well, so I was thinking that if we're going to talk about cannons and food, you should probably be thinking about how you self-identify to receive such a delivery. But now it turns out that cops can make you fingerprint unlock your devices, so maybe you're accidentally being forced to self-identify to receive a hot dog to the face. That's how I'm segueing right now. Thank you so much, Vesh, for that. For tossing that story to me so that I can help you segue.
This wouldn't be the first time I've associated cops with a pork product.
Oh, gosh. Well, at least it all ties together, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we're doing here. We're trying to tie together science, technology, and really awful segues.
Force feeding the information the fun way? What?
Well, see, the cops have never been, you've always had to provide DNA, you've always had to provide fingerprints, and if they had to sedate you to do it, they could if they got a court order. Yeah. I don't understand what the difference is. The difference is one of use, not one of what's provided. You know, that's I'm more worried about like about Cooper's implants, because that is truly unsettled territory. What happens when your computer is in your body? Do you have to compel that? That's what I want to know.
So
I want to know all these guys with NFC chips.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? What are they give up? Is Cooper going to have to give up his injections, or are they going to get a court order for removal? Because they can do court ordered operations. I don't know where that's extended to, but they can do it.
Okay, now that's a really interesting sidestep. Sorry, go ahead, Ivory Wolf.
No, that's actually quite interesting, because where do you draw the line? It's like, because this is my personal space. This is my personal space, but now...
Oh, we can't... Like, no, yeah, well, hold on. We're getting into some really sticky territory here, because it's about control over the personal... an actual individual's person, their actual personhood, a status of what makes a person, and what you get to control about yourself. Because that would mean that a piercing, essentially, is fair game for court-ordered removal of piercings and objects. Because... if it's an injected piece of technology, what is that technology providing or changing? It gets into a horribly contested area that I don't think it's not settled yet, and it won't be settled, I don't think, for hundreds of years to come. Because that's an argument that what you can do to yourself for your own perceived well-being, that is an area that it's very difficult to introduce near legislation. I don't think you're ever going to find an answer to that. You're not going to see that settled.
Oh, no, don't worry. There'll be an answer, and it will be, I'm sure it'll be thoroughly thought out, and it will never apply except for in this one narrow instance. And don't worry, because it's because terrorists.
Whatever
the next big thing is.
But okay, but the story in question here is off Gizmodo that talked about someone who was, it was in Virginia this case took place, and he was... accused of trying to strangle his girlfriend, and because there was video footage related to the incident, they were trying to compel him to unlock his device so they could see the footage. So this isn't the same thing as just random...
This makes no sense. At this point, this makes no sense. How does he have a selfie stick and it's over his shoulder and he's strangling his girlfriend? I've seen women before, and they tend to be much smaller than me, and two hands... You still need two hands. How is he holding this iPhone?
I want to know. I'm guessing that it could be a surveillance system within the home, and the access to the camera feed is through the device.
Do you? I don't believe that for 10 seconds. I don't believe that convoluted logic. The fingerprint unlocked house surveillance system. Now, I've invested in some surveillance systems in the past. I have yet to see the fingerprint enabled one.
No, but the fingerprint enabling was on the application on the phone. It's the access to the device.
And I just stream it.
Yeah, well, it's on. Quick. Go ahead.
Real quick. Is this app on his phone only tethered to or tied to that surveillance system? Because you can just grab another device, load the app, and then log on to it that way as well. Now, if it's only tied to that particular particular device or that particular app, you know, then there might be an issue. But other than that, there's other ways around that.
I agree. I agree completely. And nothing in the story indicates, at least not as far as I've been able to read so far, that it was that simple. Because... I agree. This could very simply be, okay, fine. So show Dan your way into that camera. I bet you could probably pull that footage yourself without even going into the phone.
Exactly.
It's only popular pop culture reference right now because it happened to be, well, I'm not unlocking this for you. That's it.
And it was probably just the easiest way to get to the information that they wanted by getting into the phone.
Yeah.
Right.
Can anyone see the mass amount of cooperation here? Even if it's not even at the forefront of their mind, local cops are engaging in the same practices that the federal cops are going to engage in. So the feds have several irons in the fire as it is. They've got this case in the pipeline. They've got the Apple case in the pipeline. They're going to have they're going to attack this from every different angle to make sure that they can get on-demand access to your phone, and they'll cite whatever cases, they'll do any... If this guy had a surveillance set up, and I was a friend. I mean, I've been an expert of a witness before in a federal court case or a case that went to federal court. Uh-oh. And I have to tell you that the first thing that I would do is grab the surveillance system discs.
Exactly.
That's what I would do.
But that's because you're tied up in those kind of cases.
Subpoena the company.
See, there you go.
See, but they don't want it. They don't want it. They want that. They want that phone access. They want that. They want the fishing expedition. They have them dead to rights. They want the fishing expedition.
Well, okay, hold on now. So what we're actually saying, the implication isn't anything to do with actually accessing this data. It's about accessing the device and getting permission to force people to unlock their devices. That's really what this is about.
Absolutely.
I would tend to agree because think about it. Before these apps, before the surveillance, you know, if someone was physically abused, there's other ways to find that out. And there's other ways to, you know, forensics that they can say, okay, this individual did it. He's in trouble. Enough. You don't need to see the video necessarily. You know, there's going to be bruising. There's going to be pain. There's going to be something, you know.
Was the woman dead? Like, did he kill the woman?
No, the article said that it was, where was it? It says in here that he was accused of trying to strangle his girlfriend. It doesn't state that he actually accomplished that.
He was accused of trying to strangle a girlfriend. I can't recall the last time I saw posted a case where a woman shows up to the police station with bruises on her neck, points to the guy who did it, and the cops don't take a small measurement. They compare, say, okay, your hands, you were there. What's your alibi? Okay, case closed.
Right.
Exactly. Why do they need more? Why do they need more?
Well, I agree.
Because I think there's...
Do they not believe the woman? Has there been a big shift in police thought where...
It's not about police thought. It's about forensics in this case. The argument is over forensic data and the availability of evidence. That's the focus of this particular story. Not saying it's right, not saying it's thorough, saying that that's what's being pushed here.
So here's my issue with that now, is they have the opportunity, they have the information, now they want more information, and digital information can be altered. So if they push for this, and the guy, you know, has someone, it's like, well, I'm not going to let you have it, and has someone in the back end make some changes so that it doesn't even look like anything happened, you know? You know what I'm saying?
So that comes back to the movie Rising Sun and the ability to tell. You know, security through history, security and encryption in particular, has always moved the bit. It moves it further away. It never solves it. It just moves. So a bigger password, some kind of harder to access control or credential, moves the issue and the vulnerability along the pipeline somewhere else. So if you can now, okay, so if there was the ability to allow folks to be forced to unlock their devices, now it would be fine. So the data is not trusted. Okay, so now we're going to do something to trust the data. Fine, so we're going to move it further back. There will be another point further back on the line, right?
Oh yeah, they're going to keep pushing, you know, pushing the goalposts back. But this passphrase. I mean, this is clearly Despicable Man, and way more despicable than the police that are investigating the matter. But when it comes down to it, folks, even in this instance, use a passphrase. One screen, make it 120 characters long or whatever. Make it, you know, I love Trident gum. Yes, I do. Guess how much entropy is in that statement, and nobody's ever going to guess it. But don't use that specific one. Just like don't use the one on XKCD.
Yeah.
Everybody else uses it.
Yeah, they do. So this actually brings up another idea. If we're going to keep moving those goalposts, what about the people who are getting in trouble for clearing their browser histories? Which that's a funny joke. You know, it's not tell my wife I love her, right? Now it's do something for me. What? What is it? As he's dying.
Well, that's not even what it is. The guy cleared his browser history before he even knew there was an investigation. I hope they don't check my computers because I clear my browser history every time I close out of Chrome. It's set up as my default.
Okay.
I don't.
Well, yeah, okay, so this one, but the actual story says that A grand jury indictment issued in 2014, back in May of 2014, states that this person deleted a large amount of information from their Chrome internet cache following an incident, including references to the video of the selected people involved in the event. Two of the photographs...
That was publicly accessible. The video that was publicly accessible. He could have just been looking at video of the event. And he's being prosecuted under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. You know what that was for?
Your bank fraud.
That was for Enron. That was for Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, and it was specifically so that the CEOs would be held responsible for their bookkeeping, even if they didn't know what was going on.
And by the way, so if you haven't watched it, I'm sorry, I'm jumping in. If you haven't watched it, Enron, the smartest guys in the room, fantastic picture for a lot of good backstory on that topic. Vesh, please continue.
So, by the way, Enron, a direct result of not deregulation, but what happens when you deregulate and then regulate in a different way. So, don't blame
Sarbanes-Oxley
Enron.
Sarbanes-Oxley is the result.
All on Enron.
Yeah. That was the catalyst.
Side junket. So, what happens now is if there ever is a crime that's around me or friends of mine, and say I have full disk encryption, I have secure delete, I have eraser running, that and all that, can they come after me with Sarbanes-Oxley to say, you deleted lots of things, we're going to prosecute you, and say, well, what crime did I commit? You committed the crime of Sarbanes-Oxley. And by not even committing a crime, I've committed a crime. So that's what I hate. That's where this ends.
But this doesn't end. So this goes back in the same way. Years ago, people feared an IRS audit because you had to have receipts going back at least 7 years, etc. But this, even in the article here, it's talking about that while they used Sarbanes-Oxley as the driving legislation that they were standing on, even if you destroyed any data prior to the examination of your electronic devices, you could face felony charges for performing simple computer maintenance, which doesn't make any sense.
It used to be they have to prove the conspiracy. I mean, conspiracies, a long, deep charge in and of itself. You just have to show that I could have conspired with these other folks over here to act in a illegal manner. For this, I just have to be doing what I usually do. So, and the IRS audit thing, the problem people have with that is that the presumption of guilt is put to, you are supposed to prove that you're not guilty versus the presumption of innocence that you're supposed to have in this country.
But that comes back to, that's why I maintain such a long-standing record of events, partly because my current employment, my job, the types of jobs I've been able to do are tied to the fact that I keep documentation that states when an event took place. It's part of how it works. Because it only takes... So during the event, during the course of normal workday stuff, it's not usually where this requirement comes up. It's a year down the road, 2-3 years down the road, someone says, we're trying to reconstruct the timeline. And so you have to be able to say, okay, show us a pattern of behavior. Show us what was going on. Show us how the mechanisms were configured. So if suddenly there's a complete gap, oh, well, everything was great until Tuesday in May of 2011, between Monday and Thursday, that data is all missing from all repositories. That would seem suspect.
That's fine for a private-to-private exchange. That's fine if it's you and me in a business and I see that you haven't been cataloging your incidents. But when it comes to the law and federal authorities, local authorities, state for you, if they say, hey, there's a gap in your timeline, you're guilty, that doesn't work.
Right.
They're supposed to prove that you were – they're supposed to say – you were here on this date. I have the receipts. I have the transactions. They're supposed to prove that I was there committing a crime. I'm not supposed to have to prove that I wasn't there committing the crime.
This is the backward. You can't. So that comes to the push-pull argument of, okay, are you going to prove yourself out of the situation or require them to disprove that you were in the situation? Are you going to disprove you were involved? Or are you making them prove that you were there? I'm trying to.
The burden of proof is on them. Yeah. I'm, So I'm going to make every effort to prove my innocence
right.
outside of what the law is going to provide, basically to contradict their arguments. But the way the justice system is supposed to work is that you, at Mr. FBI, Mr. Local Policeman, are supposed to prove that I did it and do an investigation. The presumption of innocence is on me, and it's up to you to prove beyond reasonable doubt that I did it. So, or you know, was it probable cause arrest? I forget the exact words, but the long and the short of it is that it's up to them to prove that I'm guilty, not up to me to verify my innocence.
Right, and that's the method that we hear about all the time on television. But if it's considered something to deal with information and privacy. I don't know. It seems like that line's getting a little more blurred. Coop, what do you think?
Well, why not just CYA? You know, cover your own ass and be able to document. And if you were then charged, be able to say, well, sorry, I wasn't involved in that. Your data is inaccurate because I was doing this at this time instead. And I can list these character witnesses that were there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I'm sorry. I was at blah, 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 makerspace playing around on a 3D printer. I wasn't at home cracking the grid or whatever the hell they are trying to say that you did. And it's like, I'm sorry that my servers are down. Well, I've got stuff on there I got to protect, like my family's financial records, stuff like that. I'm not going to just, you know, let that be able to be taken. You know, if somebody is attempting to break in, then, you know, it automatically deletes because, you know, for that extra measure of security, how is that my indication of guilt?
But see, you already said in that statement, that's an incorrect statement to make, because what you said was they showed up with data indicating that you did something. So that's the way it's supposed to work. They show up with the data that indicates that you did something.
Instead of
and then you
saying
go back
just insinuations.
What you're saying is completely just in this world, that once they say, I have evidence that you were here, and then you show up with evidence that proves you were somewhere else, that's fine. What they're saying here is that mm-hmm. without any evidence that you did anything wrong, we are going to come to you and charge you with doing something that, and then it's up to you to disprove that you did it. Yeah. It's not up to us to prove our information correct. It's up to you to prove that we are falsely accusing you. That's disgusting.
All right, Ivory Wolf, you have to defend this point too.
Isn't that unconstitutional?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's unconstitutional. Not a lawyer, however. Mm-hmm. I will say that in the tradition of English law, the presumption of innocence is a very large, large, large portion of it.
Yeah.
Ivory Wolf, thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, when it comes down to it, they are trying to getting ways around what the problem really is. So instead of trying to, they just want all the data. All the data, and like Vesh said, terrorists. You know, that's what they kind of go back to. So they're going to leverage that as much as possible, try to scare, you know, the masses. Hey, you should have this information. I'm not going to sit there and collect.
9/11. Stop that. Stop that now.
I'm not going to sit here and collect all of my history and say, here you guys go, just in case you need it. That doesn't make any sense. It's like, if I'm going to do my normal spring cleaning, I'm mm-hmm. going to clear my cache. I'm going to, you know, clear my history. I'm going to do all the things that I want to do. And the reason, you know, let's face it, what was one of the main reasons why we did that? It wasn't to, you know, oh, because we didn't want our, you know, loved ones to see where we went. It was because, you know, there was malware out there that was looking at your history and pulling stuff and saying, ooh, well, he goes here. And because that they go there, let's now see what the popular sites are and start, you know, attacking those sites, infecting them. You know, it's reconnaissance, you know, it's intel gathering. So you don't necessarily want, You know, if you do get hit, you don't want all that crap getting out.
So now that's so with that in mind, what about people who are willing to take the extra step of building that, in a way, in building that chain of custody or events? There are people who are now, like Coop, who implant NFC chips to exploit phones. So not only are they trying to use these implants as a way of building their own timeline, they're trying to use it to scam information. Do you think that same information can be used against people?
If they get caught. And see, that's the thing. It has to be, you know, if someone is using this technology, you know, for bad, they have to prove that you're doing this. If you're not doing this bad stuff, they need to leave you alone. But they have to prove that you're actually doing it.
Yeah. Prove that my history clearing and my full disk encryption was malicious. Don't tell me that because I clear my history and I use full disk encryption that I am thus malicious.
No, that's fair. No, that's absolutely fair. And I can't argue that at any point, because that's what a secure environment is meant to do. If I'm working in an environment saying, okay, I don't want external sources to have witness to this because it's none of their business, I'm operating within my own rights. However, if after that's done, I'm leaving artifacts all over the place for people to find, that's one thing. If you come scooping my information and using it as artifacts, that's another.
Exactly. Right. So, and in Cooper's situation, if someone sat there and said, hey, you know, he's got these, so he's definitely up to no good, that's totally wrong.
Yeah, you got to prove it first.
Exactly.
Just because I have an implant doesn't mean I'm out there trying to do damage. Because if you actually
not according to Sarbanes-Oxley, it doesn't.
Yeah, if you look at what it does, it's just like a digital business card. It's just so happens that the link that's in there right now doesn't take you to my personal resume. It will Rickroll you because that's my sense of humor.
Okay, wait. So Vesh, now I'm going to ask next week. I want to actually have the section of Sarbanes-Oxley you're referring to. Can we actually go over that? Is there a way to make that digestible?
Yeah, I'm sure it's a lot of data.
I've actually talked to a couple of people that are called like Sarbanes-Oxley auditors.
Oh, wow.
And I have to tell you, if you thought that accountants were a boring lot, you have yet to see a Sarbanes-Oxley compliance guy. It is like the accountant's risk actuary.
Oh my gosh.
It is. That
sounds like a hot date.
It's like listening to Ben Stein, but you're slowly getting dumber instead of smarter.
Bueller. It seems difficult then. So you're saying that we couldn't make this exciting in any way. So there's not going to be a movie of the week that's like Sarbanes-Oxley, the film, da-da-da. They're not going to be showing people jumping over cars for this.
There's a reason why the Enron stuff has only been made into a series of poor documentaries.
Oh gosh.
I mean, it's not poor. Poor in the fact that they constantly get facts wrong. Not so much poor in the fact that, you know, it wasn't exciting. I mean, I guess as far as fraud goes, it was probably exciting.
From an I can't believe they did this, and I can't believe that someone got away with this almost, or something like that.
I can't believe the chief met with Bernie Madoff and said, "Hey, Bernie Madoff's all aces." One of his attachés goes, "Hey, this guy's a con artist. You shouldn't be hanging out with him." But the SEC chief goes, he's cool. He's a cool guy. Bernie. Gosh. He's got billions."
Are you serious?
By the way, that happened.
That happened what?
That happened right before the that junior accountant, one of the SEC, was it not receivers, but one of the SEC investigators or something was saying, "Hey, this is a bit off." And then somebody said, "Well, why is it a bit off?" And they said, "Well, because Bernie is giving payouts that are way over what traditional payouts are, and he just keeps making money." So for those that aren't familiar with a Ponzi scheme, that's kind of what it is. Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
You know, you're giving this guy 20% per year on his investment, but that relies upon you sucking in more idiots.
And that's the actual problem and the concern with any kind of, anytime, it's a risk,
any,
right?
Any government intervention in any market whatsoever?
I don't know that that's a government action. I don't know that that's what that is. Because a Ponzi scheme doesn't require government participation. Human beings are
no,
the
just,
ones
that's who... That's just a Social Security scheme.
Oh, don't even. Don't even. So, instead, let's talk about digital rights in the spotlight in 2016 rather than get into that particular heated debate that follows. Because I think Vesh likes to roll these little conversational, social, incendiary devices into the room and then just kind of tee-hee his way out. I actually see him mentally covering his mouth and tee-heeing as he leaves.
I am a social justice warrior.
Sure.
Everyone who buys that, raise your digital hands.
It's just not the accepted Bitcoin form of social justice.
If you believe him, you owe me a Bitcoin.
Look, all right, I'll give you, you know, if you want some outside social, like this isn't even social, this is all business.
Antisocial.
Advice. So, well, yeah, antisocial. This is antisocial, but in a different way. So, Zynamics, I want to get this out before we close. So Zynamics has been diff for free now, right? And
hooray.
If you go, hooray, I know, right? If only Ida were free.
Oh, but, yeah.
So go ahead.
You're dreaming now.
I know. But here's the problem with some of these, and we've seen it before, is the money is not in these tools. And Zynamics was a great case study. Just like Sean Heelan's thing there, that was I can't remember the name of it, but in private conversation and in some Twitter stuff, he had intimated that there's just no money. You know, you don't sell enough of them.
Oh.
So at least the RE and attack tools. So what happened was, and it was really funny to read the Google security blog, security.googleblog.com, I think. And if you go there, it says on the Zynamics portion, it says Zynamics now for free. You know, we wanted to offer you this great product. So we bought Zynamics and we offered it for sale at the same price that it was at. And then we lowered the price because it was selling so well. Because when something's selling well, you lower the price.
Right.
So
yeah, so, actually there, it's from this. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. It was security.googleblog.com.
There's that long memory of mine again. So, and for those of us that have sold tools before, the hardest sell are these RE tools. People just don't want to pay them. There's not that many people know how to use them, can use them, things like that. So, you know, any firewall, like even pfSense, which is kind of a free BSD style firewall, right? It's a good firewall and all that. Even they're making money selling devices now, and it's just another firewall like any other firewall. But it's a defense tool. That's where the money is, in defense. It's not in the RE space for their tools.
Right. It's the ability to use the tool effectively that actually makes it gives it extended value. It's not the actual tool itself.
It's the service that you build around the tool set. It's the people. You want the RE services that make it are the ones that rely on the RE labs.
Yeah.
The service end of it. Us. You buy our services, don't buy our tools.
Okay, but even like IDA Pro and things like that, where you actually have to somehow afford the tools to become that valuable service on the other end, you're the service provider. Whether it's a Shodan or whether it's a publicly accessible paid for tool or an in-house tool that you develop and release, something, there's got to be someone who knows how to use said tool. Otherwise, what good is it?
If it is an RE tool, if it's a reverse engineer, think about it. Think about it before you go and you try to build a business around it. It sounds, I have been in meetings and I have been at these startup workshops where people are advertising these very capable tools to pull apart this or that. I've written a few myself, and I got to tell you though, as exciting as they are,
they just don't what?
They just don't make any money. They can't build
But it, I mean, there's I'm no sure market for that. This isn't a widget like, this isn't a kitchen timer, right? I mean, it's not something, it's a very narrow scope of focus that of people who can actually make use of these things. That's why if we look at graphics tools, we've moved from a model that says every 2 to 3 years, we're going to sell a big fat pile of them. Hey, here's the next release, the 2011 edition, the 2013 edition. Instead, the graphics tools have gone to a month-to-month model because A, people can't afford it, and B, you can't make enough money if you don't do it this way. You've got to find a way to keep people on the hook to keep the cash flow stable enough. And so if you have a very narrow window, as I believe, Vesh, it's your phrasing. I may have the words slightly off, but it's a really tiny pool with a really long memory. So don't upset people in this arena, because it's tiny.
Oh yeah. Don't pee in the InfoSec pool.
Yeah.
And by peeing, I mean you can kind of be like me and be a little bit rough around the edges, maybe say some stuff you're not supposed to, but don't insult people's coding practices. Or you know, there's got to be a lot of evidence that somebody is a true charlatan out there.
Yeah.
In order to really start, you want to be a little bit careful, because you don't want to alienate the entire crew of InfoSec guys, because we do rely a lot on trust. I mean, most of us, you know, look at the stance that we took on the Apple in the Apple debate.
Yep.
And we want that privacy and security, and we're willing to go to great lengths to get it. So that's just who we are. But I gotta tell you, there are some. This is a real diva rich environment.
That it is. So, that it is, because I have met some real cool people. And I've met some real tools, and those tools think that they're, you know, crap don't stink. And let's face it, when you find these people, then you ask them, say, well, what have you done lately? And they haven't really done anything lately.
Hmm. And see, therein lies the rub. Where's the line drawn?
Well, I think the line is, if you show up on attrition.org's website, That's it. That's the big fat black line.
You've made it, or you've gone too far? Which is it?
You have gone way too far.
Yes.
There are some people. Even the Tracer T kid. The Tracer T kid. He's stupid, but I don't think anybody's gonna sit there and be too mean to him if he did really want a career in security, because it was a dumb thing to do. But at least the kid's trying.
So we all make mistakes, and I think that should be where we close this week, is understanding that we all want to make it, whatever it is. We want to be accepted, and we want to be able to do this work because we actually enjoy it. Otherwise, why on earth would we be here? Thank you so much for tuning in to Saha Says. Have a good night.